And now, broadcasting on Star Worldwide Networks, it's In the Green Room. Green is in, but what does that really mean for you? Join the gang for a fun and energetic half-glass, half-full perspective to what and how sustainability is the lifestyle for the future. It can really affect everything you do, from your health, wallet, environment, money, even your morals. So our goal, to help save the planet one show at a time. Now, welcome to the Green Room.
Welcome, everyone, to In the Green Room. I'm Kinga.
And I'm Chet. I hope everybody's having an excellent day today.
Woohoo!
We have a few legends in the studio. Dr. James Kneller, you want to tell everybody hello, too? Now, you're kind of a full-time co-host. I feel like we should kind of establish that.
It's the greatest show on earth. Why be anywhere else on a Tuesday night?
I couldn't agree more. So we have Gary Edens and Gary Driggs back in the studio tonight. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here again.
Welcome back, Gary Driggs.
We're just like a boomerang. You throw us out and we just circle around back.
Okay, that's what we want. Just keep those funny comments rolling, okay? Hi, Jim Kitchell.
Yes, Jim Kitchell.
We are super excited to get you on the show for the first time.
Thank you.
And wonderful to have key individuals who have shaped the development of Arizona in so many important ways. We have with us live the legacy of the discovery of copper mines in Arizona to natural and environmental preservation, community development, heritage, the five C's of Arizona represented right here. And those five C's are?
Copper. Chet, do you want to say the five C's?
You got it.
No, I'm going to see if you know them.
It's right here. Copper, cotton, citrus, cattle, and climate.
I wanted to see if my son knew the five C's.
Of course.
So it's a legacy of effective leadership that we can all learn from and apply to ourselves. And we are delighted to have this outstanding panel here with us. Again, Gary Driggs, Jim Kitchell, and Gary Edens. Thank you so much for joining us.
And I want to mention that Gary Driggs has been responsible for saving a lot of our mountain preserves. And that is saving the planet
one show at a time. Well, technically, that would be one hike at a time. But you guys like to go hiking a lot, right? You have a little hiking club. Gary, you're kind of in charge of it, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, we do hike. Gary Driggs and I, years ago, started a tradition that it's called, it later became known as the Two Garys Hike. And we have a Two Garys Hike shirt for you from a couple of years ago. This was the Two Garys Hike in Sedona. So there's one for you.
Oh, Jeff, wow, we get shirts?
And one for your mother.
Yay!
Kinga Johns, okay? Kinga,
that is super nice.
Here's one for you. So you can join us on the trail at 36th Street wearing your Two Garys hiking shirt. We're having our 20th anniversary hike January 25th next year.
I will be there.
Good.
That's so wonderful. I will be there. So I want to know how this whole pack of hikers came about. Gary Driggs, can you tell us?
Well, it came about because it's our survival. Our doctors told us the best medicine we could take is a hike. And old guys in their 70s and 80s need the best medicine, and it's what keeps us going. 10,000 steps every day.
And what else do you have in common? Your friends in other ways, the President's Club, Arizona Historical Society.
Well, we started out as young presidents, but...
YPO.
YPO, and they have regular YPO, and then YPO Gold, which really means YPO Old.
So you've all been in this club since you guys have been, what, in your 40s? 30s?
The two of us, the two Garys.
The two Garys.
Right. Jim was an attorney. He's a recovering attorney now.
Right? Oh, Jim's a pilot. He's a hot air balloonist. And you've also been a director of airports.
Yes, indeed. Sky Harbor and also Reno.
It's just amazing. All your family, and we have so much history to go over.
So, Jim Kitchell, your mother was a Douglas, which is a very significant name, and your story really begins with your great-great-grandfather. And we need to touch on this. Born in Scotland, 1800, son of a Methodist minister, and very significant to me, founded the Douglas Institutes of Mental Health across Eastern Canada, Quebec City and Montreal. And I, as a McGill medical student, have rounded to the Douglas. Every McGill medical student knows what psych at the Douglas refers to. And we've been to those historic places. And amazing that this is your family's legacy.
I was delighted to find out that you had gone to McGill. And I have only met two or three people that have been at that university. But I guess the Douglas name is quite a big name up there.
Yeah. So your family using its talents, its influence, its resources to meet the immediate need of the community. And that is impressive that James Douglas, one, a medical doctor, made that his one of his life missions.
Yes, indeed. And then his son, who bailed him out from some sort of a poor investment in north of Detroit, a copper mine, ended up ultimately coming out to Arizona in the 1885 time frame and checking out some ore that had sent back to his assessing firm and determining that it was very high-grade ore. That copper ore came from the Copper Queen mine down in Bisbee, mm-hmm. and there's also some of the ore from Jerome. He made two trips out here and determined that both of them are very good finds, but there was only one that made sense to develop at the time in the 1885s.
So, Chad, are you listening to this? Jim Kitchell's family is responsible for our copper here in Arizona being discovered that it's the most famous mine for copper, right?
Well, there are a number of famous mines for copper in Arizona. The first development that my family was involved in was down in Bisbee, and they developed the mine and then a smelter in Douglas. And then they branched out to Morenci and Tyrone, New Mexico. They built a railroad to haul the ore to market and to smelting, and just really kind of developed the southeastern part of Arizona.
So that's impressive. You know, most doctors are not great business people, and I guess James One was one of those, and he had bought that crappy mine in Detroit, and James Two had to discover the Hunt Douglas extraction method. So he definitely knew how to get copper out of very poor quality deposits, which would help him recognize the extraordinary value of the deposits here in Arizona.
Yes, it worked very well for him in the Detroit area, but it has actually been a process that has worked well around the world and has worked well in the later years of Bisbee when the ore had become less rich and they were still able to extract.
And working with Phelps Dodge, which your family was in partnership with for generations, James too, president of the mining company and then president of the railroad to service the mining operation.
Yes, it was kind of coincidental that he ran into Mr. Phelps and Mr. Dodge at some social event in New York, and he was talking about these samples of ore that were sent to him, and he was assessing them and determining them. They were very high quality. So these guys who had a mercantile store mm-hmm. selling pots and pans thought that it might be better if they integrated vertically and got into the mining business. So this was their first venture into mining when they asked James Douglas to come out west and determine whether or not it was feasible to start a mine.
Right. And to date, one of the most productive mines yes. globally for copper. We understood 8 billion pounds of copper have come out of that mine. And that was very significant to World War I, with making copper wire to support the war effort in particular.
Yes, indeed. And that was what later became named the Lavender Pit. And there were two types of mining done in Bisbee. One was the open pit mining, which the Hunt Douglas extraction method was particularly useful to. But there was also a underground shaft mine that brought out a much more rich ore. So interestingly enough, the great-grandfather was involved with the mining, and his son then, Walter Douglas, followed the mining business, and the railroad that was built by the mine to carry the ore to market was later sold to Southern Pacific. It was originally named the El Paso and Southern Railroad. And as you move forward to another family issue was my grandmother was involved in the starting of the Phoenix Botanical Garden, Desert Botanical Garden. And one day I found myself up at Tuzi Goot looking at the ruins and looking at the tailings from the mines and came to the conclusion that my grandfather was tearing up the environment with the mining and my grandmother was restoring it with the botanical garden concept. So
a little
internally
balance.
A little conflict.
What was that, Chet?
I was like, oh, they were balancing each other out because he was, tearing up the earth mining, but still that's contributing to society because we need those metals for our technology. But the work that his grandmother did starting the botanical garden, that does a great job conserving those plants and educating people about those plants. So
Chet,
that balance is crucial.
I have a question for Chet. His great-grandfather donated $1 million to Canadian schools back when in like 1915.
That's a statement, yeah.
So no, my question, here's the question. How much would that equate to now?
Oh, because of inflation? I would say at least probably 10 times that amount, maybe 15, I would guess. If that was over 100 years ago.
Over 100 years ago, so it must be a tremendous amount now.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably like at least 20 times inflation now, so that's probably equivalent to $20 million now.
Gary Driggs doesn't know the answer. He knows the answer to everything. Gary Driggs, what's the answer to that? In 1915, his great-grandfather donated $1 million to Canadian universities. What would that be now?
Well, my motto is often in error, but never in doubt, so I always have an opinion. May not be right, but I think... I think it's maybe probably 15 million plus or minus.
Wow. So a family making, substantial philanthropic contributions, generous contributions to benefit society, which is really a great characteristic of the Douglas family, and probably got Lou Douglas, who is more of a cousin, the job of being budget director for President Franklin Roosevelt during his tenure. And then he also served as chancellor of Queen's University Canada.
My grandfather, Walter Douglas, had a brother named James Douglas, James S. Douglas, often referred to as Rawhide Jimmy. And he left the family business in Bisbee Douglas and went up to Jerome and developed the Little Daisy Mine. And that was a very fortuitous event that happened right about the First World War also, raising a tremendous amount of ore from that mine. Anyway, his son, he had a number of kids, but one was Lou Douglas, who ultimately became ambassador to the Court of St. James, the United States ambassador to England, but he had also been the budget director for President Roosevelt.
And then your father, who was an attorney, and he had a law firm. What was the law firm called?
Well, he had went to work for a law firm called Ellenwood & Ross in the 30s. Mm-hmm. And when he came back from serving in the Army Air Corps in World War II, the two founders of that firm, Ellenwood & Ross, had passed away, and there were Supreme Court rules that prohibited having deceased partners on the masthead. So he and other senior associates at that point in time changed the name of the firm to Evans, Hull, Kitchell, Riley, and Jenks.
And then your dad was the one that helped Senator Barry Goldwater with his campaign.
Yes. Over time, Dad had represented, he was very much a liberal when he came out to Arizona from New York, but and he represented and wrote speeches for Isabella Greenway, who was a territorial congresswoman. And she was a Democrat, but Democrats in those days had a little bit more conservative thinking. In any event, later on he became general counsel to the Republican Party in Arizona and ultimately became the presidential manager for Goldwater's campaign.
So, Chet, you've met Barry Goldwater Jr. many times, and you've met Joanne Goldwater.
We talked to him on the show.
Well, yeah, he's been here
of course.
At least five times. So that's pretty amazing that Jim Kitchell's dad was the director of his campaign when he was running for presidency. So now we get to Jim Kitchell. So tell us about you. We know that you love hot air balloons, and you're a pilot.
Thank you. Yes, I grew up in Arizona. Grew up in Phoenix at 28th Street and Osborne on a small farm. My mother took care of the farm while my dad was in the service, World War II. Dad was a lawyer. His father was a lawyer. When I got out of school, I was looking for something to do, so I became a lawyer. And I practiced law with the firm for a couple of years and became a lobbyist for a little while. And then I went to work for the city attorney's office. I became the airport lawyer, and that was the first time I really put together my vocation and avocation to have, be a happy person.
That's awesome. That's the modern equivalent of a railroad, because now we're flying everywhere. So in the finest Douglas tradition, you became the head,
transportation.
Head of railroad operations.
Yes, there we go.
And what?
How did you get into this fascination with the hot air balloons, and was it a business or a hobby?
It was, thank you, a business hobby. It started out as a way to get out of the law firm and get into the countryside. I enjoyed flying, and I saw a few pictures in a magazine about the balloon fiesta in Albuquerque, and that intrigued me, so I tracked down a balloon to get a ride in, and I fell in love with it right away. I had been a fixed-wing pilot, so from there, learning how to fly a balloon was pretty easy, and it was, number one, a really social event. You have about five people that help you put the balloon up every day, and you get up in the early morning, you see the sunrise. It's all the things that we get to see when we hike with the two Garys.
Okay, so I've never been in a hot air balloon. Chet, have you?
Yes, I have, but it was tethered, so I don't know if that fully counts.
No, that
was
not, that
was not at the will of the was not at the will of the weather. But yeah, I was gonna say, how dangerous is it? Because I've heard like if the conditions change at all, it can be a little bit dangerous, right? If there's any wind out of nowhere. Or...
There are some wonderful sayings about flying and danger, but for the most part, it's like any other flying. It's you have to be very cautious and look at all your equipment and be sensible, looking at the weather. And if you do everything right, it can be very safe.
So have you taken all your hiking friends? Gary Driggs, have you been on his hot air balloons?
Well, not on his, but I've been with others. But it's always an adventure because a hot air balloon is controlled not by you, but by the wind.
That's the beauty of it. You cast your fate to the wind every time you take off. You always know where you're going to start, but never know where you're going to end up.
How about Gary Edens? Have you been on a hot air balloon, or have you flown in his airplanes?
Back in my radio days, we had a KOI hot air balloon, and we had Captain Ted who would fly it. I remember one time when the Phoenix Open was played down at the Phoenix Country Club, Captain Ted was good enough to fly the KOI hot air balloon right over the golf course, and I didn't even have to pay the Thunderbirds any fee.
And it says here 3 million ounces of gold came out of your mine, so we were hoping you brought some door prizes or party favors.
You know, I was looking for those, and somewhere they're buried in the family treasures.
God. But seriously, community contributions, president of the Arizona Historic Foundation, which Gary Driggs has also been a past president.
Yeah, Gary and I shared that role in the... Actually, the Arizona Historical Foundation was different than the Arizona Historical Society. Hmm. It was a organization that collected the papers of politicians, businessmen, and people that had made major contributions to the development of Arizona, the success of Arizona.
So, Chet, you know your dad has been a big historical buff and has collected all those Arizona documents and books and all that, so you're going to have to tell him about tonight's show.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, he loves anything that has to do with... you know, the statehood or anybody that's contributed in politics or business. So, yeah.
So I think we're just going to turn our attention a little bit here to Gary Driggs, legendary Gary Driggs from the hiking trail, president of the President's Club. Gary, Your father, your grandfather is Don Driggs, and Don was a bishop in the Mormon Church, first state senator from Driggs, Idaho, a town that was named after your family being there.
My grandfather, Don C. Driggs, in the 1800s, took his wagon up to the Teton Valley next to the what is now the Grand Teton National Park, built a log cabin, and brought his wife in there. Now, that was built without any water or sewage or anything. You just lived in a log cabin in a snow country. But those are the kind of adventures that were normal for those times. And after a while, other Driggses came, and they wanted a post office stop. So it took, in those days, 15 signatures to get a post office stop. So they got the signatures in, and on the 15 signatures, 13 were Driggses.
Wow.
So the post office just said, we might as well call this place Driggs, Idaho.
Nice.
So that's how Driggs became Driggs, just some mindless bureaucrat looking at a list of applicants. And it's still there today and quite a popular vacation spot.
But then in a very bold move, which seems to characterize the Driggs family, he sold and moved to Mesa, Arizona to purchase a cotton farm.
In 1921, he traded all of his assets, which included quite a bit of land, a hotel, and many other things in Driggs, Idaho, for 300 acres in Mesa to grow long staple cotton. And only one payment had to be made, and that would be from the cotton that was just about to be harvested. But as things can go wrong, the price of cotton collapsed, and within less than a half a year, he'd lost everything that he had, but he was still in sunny Arizona and glad to be here.
Absolutely. This part of the story, I think, is really, really cool. Chet, you have to listen to this, because his dad ended up achieving a bank status, and didn't he run the whole entire bank by himself, and he was a security guard, and he had a gun, and...
Well, my father, one of his first jobs was with the Traders Bank of Wickenburg, and he was the single employee. He was the bookkeeper, the teller, and at night he slept in the bank with a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson under his pillow to guard the bank. So that's how he first got into banking. But that turned out to be fortuitous, because when he wanted to start his own bank, B.C. Strawn, his former boss, put up most of the money to get him into business. So sometimes a job can really turn out to be better than you think.
Sometimes dropping out of university can turn out to be better than you think, because that's what your father had to do initially to support the family.
Well, in the modern day, Bill Gates quit Harvard, said that was a waste of his time. He wanted to get into business, and now he's the richest man in America.
Yes, and your father started Western Building Savings and Loans with $5,000 and grew that to a $6 billion enterprise.
That's right. That started in 1929, but fortunately it was not large enough to fail, as most of the banks did fail in Arizona during the Depression, but they were too small to fail, managed to survive, and later built a big institution.
Yeah, so you started out working with your dad in the bank, and you were actually president of the bank fully for 17 years before that happened.
Yes, that's...
And someone told your father he could become a smart doctor, and your father answered, why waste a good salesman?
Yeah, my father, one of his friends said, your son could be a doctor, and my father said, and ruin a good salesman? Never.
I love that line.
And you were winning American Legion all speaking time competitions in high school, went on to get an MBA and then a doctorate in business administration from Indiana University. You're on faculty teaching at Indiana University.
Well, it's sort of scary to think that people paid serious money to attend my classes when I was just in the 20s. But that's college these days.
Well, and then in high school, you were friends with my grandmother, Kay.
Yeah, she was one of the prettiest ladies at North High. And
I'll tell her you said that.
And I was fortunate enough to take a few dates with her, and she was lots of fun to be with. But your dad, Chet, your grandfather, Chet, won out and K. James ended up being K. Johns.
Yeah. I'm glad it worked out that way.
So. Well, my wife and I became great friends with K. and Chet. They were wonderful people and produced some pretty darn good kids and now grandkids.
Thank you very much.
We are very blessed to have you in our life, Gary Driggs and Kay Driggs, and I'm so thankful that you're here at the show because you're just in my life. You've been such a hero. You were Santa Claus. You would come over to the Coonies and be Santa Claus, and then also with the Johns family, you would come and be Santa Claus for my kids, which was so awesome.
Well, it was fun to play Santa Claus. I did it for about 50 years, and I would go to people's home the week before Christmas and ask the kids what they would like for Christmas and ask them if they'd been good. And you just never know what's going to come out of the mouths of little kids. After one house, as I was leaving, one of the kids ran out and said, "Don't go to the boy next door. He's been terrible."
When that Driggs tenacity got drawn on again in 1989 when with the banking crisis and the local savings and loans banks had to shut. Is that correct?
Well, in the savings and loan crisis, all of the savings and loans in Arizona were wiped out. So I had to start over again at age 55, but that's life.
Right. So there you are, Driggs starting over, pulling themselves up by the bootstraps. Showing that entrepreneurial spirit, that tenacity.
So how did you do this? At 55, how did you change careers?
Well, when you don't have a choice, you might as well get up and get going. So I had a good fortune to start a hotel business and a small manufacturing business, and we're doing fine now. In fact, we've really become famous. My manufacturing company is called COVID, COVID.
Everybody's talking about it.
And our name has been stolen by a pandemic.
Okay, so you have 8 hotels. Where are they, Gary?
Well, in 5 western states, we have 8 hotels, and that's a great business to be in. Grandfather Don C. Driggs had the Driggs Hotel, so we've got a little family history there.
Well, do you want to promote any properties specifically so any of our listeners can go and stay there? Or?
Good idea.
Well, you can stay at the Best Western Pony Soldier Hotel in Flagstaff, Arizona, or you could stay at the Andante Inn in West Sedona.
Oh, the Dante Inn. Okay.
Where are the other hotels? We want to know.
Well, we have 2 hotels in Kanab, Utah, which is right next to the Arizona border, and we have 2 hotels at the El Paso Airport in Texas and a hotel at the Spokane Airport in Washington. So we have 8 hotels in 5 western states.
And in your spare time, you did have some major social contributions that you made, in particular obtaining funding for public schools here in Arizona, the principle being working within the system, understanding the system, and manipulating it to affect positive change.
Well, you often get little opportunities. Governor Babbitt asked me to head a commission to figure out how we could sell state urban lands and get the money for schools. So we came up with a system of a planning lease. These had to be competitive bids, but how could you get a competitive bid on just a raw piece of ground? And so we came up with the concept, and it got put into law of the planning lease, where you would you could lease the land and develop a plan, and then it would have to go up to auction, and you would be bidding with anybody else, but you'd know more about it than anyone else. And if you lost the bid, you would get reimbursed for your planning costs. So this was just a vehicle that we came up with the help of the commission that I headed, to get some more money from the lands that were given by the U.S. government to Arizona when we became a state. And now there's a lot of value in those lands because people want to move to Arizona.
I would like to hear about the Camelback Preservation and how you're responsible for that.
Well, as a kid, I was one of the early people to pioneer rock climbing on Camelback Mountain. In fact, I made the first ascent in 1951 of the Praying Monk.
Wow.
I was part of a Boy Scout group, the Kachina Scouts, who did rock climbing. Well, I wanted Camelback to always be available for rock climbers, so when Barry Goldwater, after he lost the presidency, worked on the preservation, I helped with him, but he only ended up focusing on preserving the hump. The Echo Canyon and the access for rock climbing was still not under public ownership, and at Western Savings, when I was heading that company, a developer came and wanted financing to build a bunch of houses at the base of the mountain, and I managed to work with my brother, who was mayor at the time, and have the city of Phoenix buy it instead. And that's where we got Echo Canyon Park, and now 300,000 people climb Camelback every year and have public access, and I think it's always a good idea to maintain public access for really special places like Camelback and the Phoenix Mountains.
Wow, well, that's awesome that you and your brother then had a part in helping preserve Camelback Mountain for everyone that climbs it today.
Well, opportunities just walk by you every day, one way or another, and you just have to grab a hold of them and do what you can to help both yourself and the city and the state and others.
I love that motto.
And then not wasting your time becoming a smart doctor. You did do some very smart things for healthcare here in the city of Phoenix, hospital deregulation.
I don't really know what that means. What is hospital deregulation?
Well, back in the day, hospitals couldn't expand or buy expensive equipment without getting permission from a group of citizens, the CASA group, which was about 20 citizens, and they would have to come and apply to expand their hospital and get approval from this government board. Well, I favored free market solutions, so I was asked by the legislature to come up with a plan of deregulation of that so you wouldn't have to get an approval to add 10 beds to a hospital or some fancy piece of x-ray equipment, and that got translated into legislation. So now the hospitals make their own decisions. If they think they can support another 20 or 30 beds or build a new hospital, they can do it without applying to a government bureaucracy.
And that's the story behind Mesa Lutheran, which is now Banner Heart and Mesa.
Yes.
One hospital you really were able to spearhead the expansion in that community.
Well, we own 3,000 acres of land there, and we're building a planned community. We wanted a medical center there, and so Mesa Lutheran was willing to build one, but it had to get permission from this public board. And we worked with them to ultimately obtain that and then went on to help getting that kind of construction deregulated.
So again, the success principle, understanding the system, working within the system to affect positive change and bring about your vision for improvements.
Well, anybody can put their oar in the water and try to persuade people that they should do something of this or that or the other. And when you get a chance to be a little bit helpful, that's when you have to dig in and try to do your best.
Absolutely. Anyone can do it. And then stepping back, what we have here are three great friends doing great, happy and engaged. We talk about Blue Zone principles on this show, principles of longevity and superior health in advancing decades. And I think of the three of you really as an embodiment of four of those, truly. And we'll just take a minute for pictures. But though that being four of those principles being family, a sense of tribe, knowing your purpose, and a sense of belonging, particularly in the context of faith communities. Everyone here has had great marriages, great children, great group of friends. You guys are thick as thieves. Sense of strong purpose is driving everybody, and strong involvement in faith communities. Gary, for you in particular, and Gary Edens is at church every week, and that's very important to him. So really embodying those Blue Zone principles and showing us what those can achieve in our lives.
How often do you guys get together and have some fun? Gary Edens?
Well, Gary Driggs and I hike 7 days a week on 36th Street, and we get at least 10,000 steps a day. And recently I've been getting about 20,000 steps a day. And it's just it's good camaraderie. And we go on these annual hiking trips every January called the Two Garys Hike. And this year will be the 20th anniversary, and we hope to have about 12 to 15 folks there.
Where will it be this year?
It'll be at the Grand Canyon, which is where it started. So it'll be very nostalgic. And we're not quite the hikers we used to be. I mean, some of us have done the Grand Canyon rim to rim in one day many times, but we're going to make this a little more camaraderie than hiking. We're going to hike down to Indian Garden and back, and then we're going to have dinner.
How long of a hike is that?
Probably 4 or 5 hours at most.
Oh, that's a long hike.
And then we will also have, for people that don't want to go down, and this will be in January. So
perfect, I want to go.
It could be snowy, weather. Well, you'll need your crampons for the snow, but there'll be a rim hike, and that's going to be about 8 miles, so just around the rim. And that's a beautiful trail up there, and there's no hill work. You're just kind of walking around the rim on a gorgeous trail with beautiful, beautiful overlooks.
I'm a little bit scared of that it's so steep. I've only gone down a little bit with Kay and Chet, Chet's grandparents, and it kind of scared me, so I don't know.
Well, the first time a good friend of ours, Bill Riley, went with us, he had never hiked in winter, and we went to the Babbitt Trading Post, and there was this old guy there named Maverick, and he sold crampons, and he sold poles, and Bill said, "We're going down the Kaibab Trail that's all icy and snowy. Do you think I need some of those crampons to keep me on the trail?" And the guy said, "Yeah. Yeah, unless you want to be one of them screamers." He sold a lot of crampons by saying, "Unless you want to be one of them screamers." But yes, it's very cold at the Grand Canyon in January, but that's part of the charm of the trip.
So who else going?
Oh, it's a lot of names you would know. Most people, we went a little younger last year and got a guy in his 60s. But it's mostly longtime friends. A longtime friend of ours is Charlie Dunlap. You've heard of Dunlap, Arizona. I mean, Dunlap, the street and all of that. He's a longtime native. Others would be Phil Francis. Phil's the former CEO of PetSmart.
I see him almost every morning,
tall
guy.
That's right. And as I said, Bill Riley. Bill has given a lot back to the community. He was chairman of the University of Arizona Medical Center, and he's been a longtime participant in civic activities. Years ago, he was chairman of the Arizona State Fair at the Coliseum. That was years and years
Chet,
ago.
Chet, he was very good friends with your grandpa. So he speaks highly about him. In fact, I was with the two, Gary and Bill Riley, on Chet's birthday, on Grandpa's birthday. And so we were reminiscing about Pa. We had coffee on that day on November 13th.
Rest in peace.
And Dr. Driggs, you wrote a white paper in a major medical journal. Do you want to tell us about the white paper you contributed?
Well, about 15 years ago, I contracted prostate cancer. And I found a great doctor and a good program to treat it with just changes in lifestyle. So I wrote an article entitled, "How Prostate Cancer Can Extend Your Life."
Can you explain that to us?
Well, the point is, prostate cancer and many other cancers respond to changes in lifestyle. And so if you're motivated by getting an improvement in a cancer diagnosis, lifestyle changes can extend your life because, for example, the main cause of life is heart disease, And the best thing for heart disease is to start exercising and getting your weight down and living a healthy lifestyle. And that will extend your life even if you have cancer. And so if the cancer motivates us to change our lifestyle, to make a more healthy lifestyle, which we all know we should do anyway, is there anybody that doesn't know we should exercise regularly, eat a healthy diet, getting adequate sleep, and keep your relationships with others on a favorable basis? Those things extend life, and we all know we should do it, but a milkshake or a big box of candy looks attractive, and we wolf it down before we realize that we may have just clipped off a few minutes from our life expectancy.
Hey, Gary, tell them about, you used to be a big ice cream eater. Tell them how you got out of the habit after this of eating ice cream.
Well, we all know what the symbol of poison is. It's a skull and crossbones that you see on a label. And so all you have to do is start imagining when you look at the creme brulee or a milkshake that it has a skull and crossbones stamped on the side of the container. And that may dissuade you from eating the whole thing. And we can always remember that Burger King ad where we had the old lady that said, "I can't believe I ate the whole thing." And well, a big step towards a healthy lifestyle is to not eat the whole thing.
Yeah, that lady is not alive anymore, for sure. Yeah, she's not with us.
So back to you. So you basically healed yourself because you didn't allow them to do the surgery on you. And the reason why was, is it appropriate for me to say?
Well, prostate cancer is a very common disease. In fact, if you're a male, your probability of having prostate cancer is your age. So a 50-year-old male has a 50% chance of having prostate cancer. If you're 90, you have a 90% chance of having prostate cancer. And that cancer will probably be with you when you die, not cause you to die. So a lot of things are just better to be treated by lifestyle than extreme treatments, because lots of people that get operations and other things, for a male, you could lose potency and continence, which are very important to every male, and the surgery and radiation can often interfere with those two things. Changes in lifestyle allow you to not have the bad side effects sometimes of radiation or surgery. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't cases where you do need extreme treatment, but for many diseases, you have to separate the line between what you can live with and what you can improve with treatment.
One of Gary's good lines about doctors, and I'm sorry, Dr. Jim, is there's no such thing as unnecessary surgery when your surgeon has three kids in college.
and that should motivate us all to choose the lifestyle option, is maintaining what we all hold dear as men, and that it being potency and continence.
Right. Yeah.
So choose the lifestyle option.
What do you mean by potency?
You have to ask.
Chet, what would you understand potency to mean?
You got to have your energy still. I feel like that's the best way to put it. If you're doing radiation treatments and you have chemo, you're not going to have any energy.
Well,
I would say potency is your ability to maintain a meaningful sex life.
Yes. And
is that what it means, Gary?
Exactly.
That goes away if they go there and scramble your prostate. So, gentlemen, choose lifestyle. Fruits
and vegetables. So on that note, we can talk about your marriage. I'm really curious to hear about you and Kay.
Well, Kay and I have celebrated our 61st wedding anniversary, and I'm very fortunate to have the same wife. And
what's the secret to such a happy marriage for so many years?
Well, The secret is to give your wife regular foot rubs, because women abuse their feet terribly. Why would anybody walk around on some little 4-inch high, tiny wobbly thing that you could fall down with? And so their feet constantly hurt. And lots of people have asked me for my advice on marriage. And I tell them, give your wife regular foot rubs. And I add, good things will follow.
And to avoid arguments, what's your solution to avoiding arguments?
Well, if you're touching skin to skin, it's almost impossible to have an argument. Try holding hands with your wife or girlfriend and see if you can carry on an argument, and you just about can't do it. There's something magical about human beings touching other human beings. It's part of our nature, and that's where how we feel affection, and children want to hug their or hold on to their parents. Boys and girls love to touch each other, and I don't mean in an inappropriate way, but dancing, just almost all of our social activities really involve one way or another touching other human beings, and it's a magical thing that we need to not disregard, and we need to realize that the human touch is something that's really important, and if we'll do that, it'll be better for families and marriages and all of our relationships.
And Jim Kitchell, you have an interesting experience with marriage that's worked out serendipitously and well for you in the long run. Do you want to tell us about that?
I've had the opportunity to have two wives, which is really...
Wait, Chet, you got to listen to this. Chet, this is super funny, and Gary Edens has to chime in here.
This is really a special opportunity to have two wives, both of them wonderful ladies, and 13-year marriage the first time, and 30 years on this one. The nice thing about the entire marriage relationship is that my first wife and my current wife are very best of friends and work together in many ways.
So, Chet, they're all on the same Christmas card together. His ex-wife and his wife, current wife, are like so close that they share a Christmas card. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's awesome to be inclusive and loving each other.
Absolutely. I think
it's terrible to hear about when families are separated.
I agree.
I've often said that in the first relationship, wife, we were friends before we were married, while we were married, and during the breakup, and always friends. So it was just a wonderful relationship.
And this is the Blue Zone principle of creating your tribe, your support structure that's around you. So it's fabulous. That's worked out for you so well.
Yeah, thank you.
I want to ask Gary Driggs about his marriage proposal.
Well, I dated my current wife for the better part of about 9 months, and I wanted to make sure that she accepted my proposal for marriage. So I didn't say, will you marry me? I simply said, when shall we get married? So there wasn't a chance to say no. It was pick a date.
So, Chet, remember that when you're proposing.
I will. That's a good move.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Some prospects out there that you want to tell us about?
Oh, yeah, my girlfriend Christina. We've been dating for 3 years now, actually.
I love Christina.
3 years and 3 months, so things are going well. Great.
Well, get married and have a bunch of children. Us old people need more taxpayers to support us in our old age. So we desperately in this country need more children. So that's your assignment.
I have a lot of friends who are actually like having kids right now amid the pandemic. I think it's kind of an interesting time to want to have kids.
Really? You never told me that. Who's having kids?
None of my good high school friends that you know, but it's from some of my friends from college and some of my girlfriend's friends. They're really looking forward to having kids, and some of them are even pregnant. Have
I
already
want grandkids.
Had kids.
Chet, I want grandkids.
Yes, I agree. I'm definitely gonna have kids at some point in the future, but I want to wait for the world to be a little more stable right now.
No. You want to be young, and you've got a built-in babysitter. You're fine.
I'm talking about the whole, like, the fact schools and, you know, movie theaters and everything are shut down right now.
Homeschool. They can homeschool with me. Don't worry about it.
That's okay.
Anyhow, I want to go to Gary Edens now. We want to hear about Gary Edens and his beautiful, he was married for, is it 54 years?
54 and a half years, yes. Before she died in January, right?
And you also had a beautiful relationship.
Yes, we never had any harsh words, you know. We just, she was a blind date, and when I met her on, when I was a senior in college, it was a blind date, and I just knew when I saw her, she's the one. And so I haven't had a date in 57 years. So
wow.
I think, you know, after a year or two, I'll probably see what it's like to date. But my daughters will help me, and I'm sure they'll give me some advice and counsel, as will Gary Driggs and Jim Kitchell and all my friends, okay?
Well,
maybe I'll find some lady on the hiking trail sometime. What do you think?
There you go. There you go. Well, Gary, I think that you're very lucky to have this beautiful tribe to help you bounce back from that tragedy of losing your wife. And I can see they're out there having fun. And, you know, Chet, we got to get you on the trail.
I hike a lot, so I'm surprised I don't see you up there. You probably go a little bit earlier than I do. I go, like, usually around 10 once it's warmed up a bit.
Have Gary tell you his formula for resolving anger in the family. It's fabulous.
Oh, well, the rule that we had with our kids, Sue Ellen and I have two daughters, Emily and Ashley, and we had a rule, and that was everybody can get mad. We're all entitled to be able to get mad, but in our family, the four of us, you can only stay mad for 10 minutes, and only one person could be mad at a time. So Ashley would get mad, for example, and then Emily, you know, about 5 minutes later would say, well, I'm mad. Nope, you have 5 minutes to go. Only one person can be mad at a time, and Ashley has five more minutes to go, and then you can be mad. But only one person at a time in the family could be mad. And they now do that with their kids. And I think it works pretty well. It's just family rules for not having a lot of anger. And if you do get angry, it can only last 10 minutes.
So you guys have accomplished so much, and our audience is filled with people who are trying to accomplish and wish to accomplish more, myself being one of those people, always looking for advice and great examples. Gary, what can you tell us about serendipity?
Well, when people ask me for advice, I give them a word of advice, and the word is serendipity, which means finding what you're not looking for. All of us pass by tremendous opportunities in our life, but we're not open-minded to recognize those opportunities. So the word of advice is serendipity. Remember to keep an open mind.
And you use the Viagra story to illustrate the value of serendipity. Could you just share that with us one more time?
Well, Viagra started out as a heart drug. And they finished the trial and they asked people to return the unused drugs, and they wouldn't do it because it turned out to be helpful in other ways.
That's funny. So they wouldn't give a drug pack.
With
they
potency?
So really a fabulous example of serendipity. But, you know, with the economic downturn, people aren't traveling. You own hotels. How are you powering through that?
Well, it's a combination of looking for every opportunity. Right now at two of our hotels, we're hotel and the residence for 300 visiting nurses in El Paso that are coming to work on the pandemic cases. So there's always opportunities, and just keep an open mind in whatever business you're in or whatever thing in life. Never give up. There's always an opportunity.
So we only have about a minute left, and we want to hear some of your quotes. Can we start?
Oh, one time I asked Gary, I said, Gary, I know you've got 8 or 9 hotels, and I've been to some of them, and you have bars, and you serve beer, whiskey, and alcohol there, and you're Mormon, and you've never had a drink in your life, and the Marriotts are Mormons, and they have hundreds of thousands of hotel bars where they serve beer, liquor, and wine. As a Mormon, Gary, how do you justify that? And his answer was,
by rising above principle.
Another great quote of Gary is he gave a YPO graduation speech. They kick you out of YPO when you're 50 years old and you make a little speech. So he gave this wonderful speech about his life and his career, and he said, "So in summary, to be remembered as a great man in my business, die in an upcycle."
What's the one about the ladder?
He said, nepotism, don't knock it till you've tried it. It's easier to climb the ladder of success when your papa owns the ladder. No. I do remember when the savings and loans got in trouble, he had a great line called, "A rolling loan gathers no loss."
I like the one about there being a lot of vultures in the desert, so keep moving.
Well, thank you so much, Gary Driggs and Jim Kitchell and Gary Edens. It's been a great show. I appreciate you guys so much. You guys are my heroes.
Thank you.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
We'll look for you on the hike.
Thank you for listening to In the Green Room. Join us here live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. or anytime on demand 24/7 on StarWorldWideNetworks.com.